"Queer things you do hear these days, to be sure," said Sam. "Ah," said Ted, "you do, if you listen. But I can hear fireside tales and children's stories at home if I want to." "No doubt you can," retorted Sam, "and I dare say there's more truth in some of them than you reckon. Who invented the stories, anyway? Take dragons, now." "No, thank ye," said Ted, "I won't. I heard tell of them when I was a youngster, but there's no call to believe in them now. There's only one dragon in Bywater, and that's green," he said, getting a general laugh. The Shadow of the Past. Welcome to the 10th episode of the Grey Company podcast, in which we discuss thematic deck building. One of the game's strengths, especially as it has developed, is the ability for players to build decks based on theme taken from their favorite parts of the books. Gondor, Rohan, dwarves, hobbits, eagles, and more have all made a strong enough appearance for winnable decks. But how do you make them work, and is it possible to build decks based on some of the weaker traits and archetypes? All of this and more as we take to the old tales on the Grey Company.
It is episode 10? 10, the Grey Company podcast. My name is Derek, and we've made it to double digits. Here to celebrate with me is the rest of the Grey Company. Dan, how have you been since last we met?
I've been doing well. I've actually been playing more Lord of the Rings with real live human beings, which is great. My wife and I have kind of joined an Austin Lord of the Rings semi-regular group, and it's been a lot of fun, so it's good.
That's good. It's good to find the local groups.
Is that the one from the forums when that guy was like, "Hey, I'm looking for players on Austin"? Excellent.
Yeah.
Awesome. Way to go, forums.
Yeah.
All right. Matthew, how have you been? Is grad school treating you well?
Well, the semester is done, and I thought that my summer would be nothing but writing my dissertation, and then I was just asked to teach a summer school class. I was like, oh, joy. And it's one of those, like, at ASU they do, like, 5-week classes, so I've got to teach a whole semester's worth of stuff in, like, 5 or 7 weeks or something ridiculous. But
brutal.
Brutal. So I've got that coming up. I haven't played the game as much as I would like, but now that it's summer, I'm hoping to sort of, at least on the weekends, get my regular play group back up and running. So that's me.
Awesome. Ian, what about you?
I've been doing good. I haven't had as much of a chance to play the game. My Lord of the Rings time continues to be limited, but I have been taking an opportunity as we wait for the next packs to come out to kind of revisit some of the old quests and I've been going back into the Forest of Ithilien and playing Into Ithilien after, you know, avoiding that quest for a long time, and actually had a lot of fun with it. So I think that quest has actually aged well and grown on me. Other than that, I've just been caught up in Galadriel fever like everyone else, I think, and just waiting for these cards to finally come out and build some Sylvan decks. And
I would say Team Galadriel, but there's no other team. There's no competition.
There really isn't.
Awesome. I think Team Celeborn is pretty far behind Team Galadriel, I have to say.
She doesn't even do anything. I don't know why you guys like her.
Are you trolling, Matthew?
Oh, I am indeed. I am indeed. Although I will say I don't have Galadriel fever. I lurk in the forums now. I made a conscious decision a while back to not post because they did nothing but frustrate me.
You are a wiser man than I am.
So, I'm shocked that I have stuck to it. I have not posted since I made that decision because there's just certain folks in the forums that are less than positive, to put that nicely. And I would get upset. I'd get stressed. I'd get pissed. You know, they're rude to new players. They're rude to old players. And it's a new person every 3 or 4 months. Right? And so it's never the same troll on the forums. It's like, you know what? Life is too short. I've got too much going on. You know, my last year of grad school, I need to focus on me, and I've been a much happier person. But I will say that I still read them, and yeah, you guys are right. There's been a lot of Galadriel fever. How can we not talk about it this episode, I think? But I can't say that I think the card's great. I think it'll be very powerful. I've told my buddy Matt, I was like, you will be running her at all times to lower my threat as a tactics player and giving me a card. However, I don't want to use her in any deck. So I'm not excited about elves in any way, shape, or form, which maybe can segue into we're talking about theme decks, but I certainly recognize her power.
No, that is a perfect segue, because on this episode of the program, we return to our irregular series on deck building, and today we are discussing theme and trait decks. We brought this up throughout the life of the podcast, how some players get into the game strictly for theme, for the connection to the books, and this can be difficult at times, and was especially in the earlier days of the game, and today we're going to explore the current options for thematic play, as well as our hopes for the future, including Sylvan and Noldor decks with Galadriel. But let's start by opening it up with the question, what have been some of your favorite theme decks or thematic moments as you guys have played the game? Let's start with Ian.
I think, you know, there's been quite a few decks that I've built or moments that really kind of connected with the theme of Lord of the Rings. But I'd say one of the highlights is the Hobbit deck, especially as it was developed by the Black Riders. And I think part of that was just the experience of playing the Black Riders with Dan and Matthew at Gen Con, and, you know, having that experience of having Sam and Merry taking on the Witch King and killing the Witch King and fighting these Nazgul. I mean, we are talking about theme. There is some kind of thematic weirdness of the Hobbit deck as it was developed in the Black Riders, where you can kind of just take on enemies with no sweat. But leaving that aside for a moment, the deck really is rich with theme, and, you know, having these daggers of Westerness and all these cards that were included in it, and it's a lot of fun.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah, I just want to add briefly to what Ian said, is that I really love even the details, like the Hobbit deck having fast hitch, and thinking about when Sam's, like, you know, tying the rope to, you know, that they use as they're going through Mordor or whatever, that, like, even just looking at, like, individual cards in a given deck, it really enriches thematically what the kind of the story that deck is telling, which is a testament to this game, because I think a lot of games have much more generic, you know, a lot of the vanilla cards are just that. They're very vanilla. They don't add any kind of richer theme to the game. So, but, for me, one of the things I did recently, that I really had a lot of fun, just kind of make myself play differently than I normally do, because I tend to have the turtle strategy of, like, lock everything down and Spirit Glorfindel and all that kind of stuff is, like, the way that I deal with the harder scenarios. So I went back and made, Éomer, Prince Imrahil, and Éowyn. And it's all about, you know, cheap Rohan and Gondor allies and chump blocking, and you know, getting Éomer really pissed off, and Horn of Gondor and all that kind of stuff. And it's very, very thematically rich, but also a very effective deck. And I was able to go through Fords of Isin with that, and it's so much fun when not only is it effective to beat the scenario, but you're actually, like, you're playing in a way that kind of makes sense. You know, it's like a bunch of Rohan allies going out there and sacrificing themselves to save their people or whatever, and it's just, it's cool. Those are the, I think, the best times in the game is when you can win, and then and your deck actually matches, like, the story of what the scenario is kind of trying to tell.
Yeah. And Matthew, you'll be our counterpoint this evening, as you're on record as not being much of a theme player. But have there been any for you?
Right. So, favorite theme decks or thematic moments? For the thematic moments, I can't think of any. To be honest, I don't even remember Sam and Merry killing the Witch King at Gen Con. So, clearly I failed there. And I played that game. I remember the quests well, and I think those quests are thematic home runs. But thematic Definitely. Moments, I don't really remember. Thematic decks, or theme decks, you know, I took and built and tweaked Matt Newman's Rohan deck that he posted on FFG in one of the deck building articles, and I had an absolute blast with it. But I don't think I had a blast with it because it was Rohan, or that I thought that allies leaving play embodies Rohan to me. I'm not so sure that really does. The reason that I liked it so much was it's a completely different play style from what I was used to. And I found that really interesting and fun and engaging. And so I don't run a whole lot of theme decks. I'll try them. I mean, certainly everyone has done dwarf decks, because at the time there really wasn't much more you could do, especially to build really powerful decks back in the Dwarodelf cycle. And, you know, I've done a Gondor deck here or there. I don't find them to be all that powerful. So my position is that I don't find the theme decks to be all that powerful or all that consistent. They might be fun, they might be internally consistent within the source material. But as far as beating quests, I don't find theme decks the way to go, and so my decks tend to be a hodgepodge of characters that all that fit the particular niche that I'm looking for them to fill. So, long-winded answer there to say no, I don't really have either favorite theme decks or thematic moments.
Yeah. But I'm going to go ahead and jump on the Hobbit bandwagon and stay there, just because it's such a cool deck and it's such a big part of the enjoyment of the books for me. So being able to play a Hobbit deck is really fun, especially like Dan, you mentioned Fast Hitch. I went back and I built a Spirit Lore Hobbit deck that I played through some Moria quests this week, and I played Foundations of Stone. So being able to have that Fast Hitch feels really appropriate when you're kind of down in the depths of Moria, you know, going down off of Precipice and things like that. And the other deck that I've enjoyed that came to mind when we were discussing this question is a dwarf kind of digging discard deck. Very alliterative. But I think, Ian, you kind of got that ball rolling on your blog, and I kind of took that and modified that a little bit, and I played through the Hobbit scenarios with that. So just being able to kind of discard and utilize Arad Nimrise Prospector is really cool, and I remember that deck specifically because, and I hope memory is serving here and I'm not embellishing too much, but we had reached the Great Goblin, and I was able to sneak in Gandalf to polish off the Great Goblins. So that was like spot on as far as recounting the events of the book. So those are definitely going to be some of mine.
That's awesome. And that's a really good example of what we're talking about with theme, you know, decks, is it's not necessarily everything in the deck has the same trait. It's that you're able to recreate these moments that just fit so perfectly in the spirit of what the stories were telling. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so those are some of our favorites. And we've talked a little bit about their viability. What are some other viable theme decks that may not be great power decks, but may actually be effective in completing some quests?
Well, I would say any theme is going to be viable as far as completing quests. It's a matter of how consistent, or not even so much consistent, but what's their general applicability. So for example, Rangers. I think you can make an effective Ranger deck, but I'm not sure that Rangers are effective alone. I've tried Ranger decks back when Faramir came out, because I was very excited for him as a hero. I thought his ability was really cool, but then it was dead on arrival. It didn't work that well. But those are more of a support deck, I think, than a heavy lifting sort of deck.
And with Rangers in particular, I've learned that don't bring them to the wrong scenario. Because I had a really fun Ranger deck that I built, and I tried to play Druid in Forest, and I thought, oh, this will be thematic, Rangers and it's Forest. And you end up trapping all this archery in the staging area, and it shoots you to death. Right. And it's like, well, that's where the theme and the strategy have to mix, right? Because thematically, the deck seemed perfect, but then strategically, you play it, and you're like, oh, all these archers are in traps, and they're shooting me in the head with arrows, and this is not working out very well.
Right, and, you know, Rangers are actually besides Hobbits, one of my favorite thematic decks. When they first introduced Rangers, I was like, this is so awesome. And, you know, when I first saw Ranger Spikes, the idea that you're playing an attachment that's going to catch enemies, it's just so amazingly fitting the theme of these Athelion Rangers and how they set traps for the Harad army as they were coming through in that scene, and I think it's the Two Towers. Mm-hmm. But like you guys are saying, it is kind of more of a support deck and more limited, and it really gets into that area of how much are you willing to play with theme. So I think one thing I want to bring up as we're talking about theme is I don't think it's an all or nothing proposition, like this is a theme deck and this isn't. I think it's really on a spectrum, like from hardcore theme, like I will only include cards if they say Ranger on it or have some relation to something in the book, to like, oh, I'll have a couple of Ranger heroes and that's enough to make it a theme deck. It's really a spectrum, you know, and someone like Merlond is a hero that often falls into Ranger decks, but technically, according to theme, I'm not sure why this, you know, Mirkwood, Sylvan, Elf would be ranging around with these Athelion characters from Gondor. But, I mean, she kind of generally fits the theme of this kind of sneaky character who knows woodcraft and would be able to set traps. So it's really a spectrum.
And that was a little further down on our notes, but let's talk about that first before we get into some more specific theme decks. What qualifies as a theme deck? I think that's worth addressing. And I like your idea of a spectrum, Ian, because you do have the option to be it just like the books, and then you have the option to throw it all out. And usually the effective decks usually fall somewhere in the middle.
I think there's even a spectrum of theme decks. I know there are certain people on the forums who comment, and I find this just perplexing, but they comment on, well, if they weren't together in the books, then I don't want them together in my deck. And I'm like, well, the Fellowship was together for about 10 pages before they split up. And the Fellowship is a mix of men and dwarves and elves and hobbits. And so why then is it unthematic for your deck to have a mixture of these things? That has always been sort of my response. Why does every card in my deck, or at least, you know, most of them, the allies or the attachments, I suppose, and the heroes, of course, have to be all the same trait? And that seems to be, at least from my reading of the various forums, the consensus that a theme deck is all elf characters, or all characters that travel together in the books, or what have you. And I've just always found that so strange, because to me, I find that almost antithetical to what Tolkien was trying to say, which is these different groups coming together in many ways, putting aside old grudges and becoming the best of friends on these adventures. And so for me, having the strongest characters coming together to accomplish the goal couldn't be more thematic.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. Really what they're saying is that I only want to play decks where everything shares the same trait, which if that's really, you know, something you want to do and you enjoy that, by all means do it. But I think there, you know, as Ian said, there is a spectrum, and I definitely prefer kind of closer to the middle, where I do like decks that are thematic. I don't like, you know, when Thranduil eventually comes out, I'm not going to make a Thranduil Daen deck, even if that's like the most powerful archetype in the game. And I get where you're coming from, Matthew, that, hey, like powerful characters coming together, I'm totally with you on that. But powerful characters being like Legolas and Gimli, where they're able to overcome those, you know, racial, in some cases, thousands of years of racial hatred and become, you know, close friends. But there's other cases where thematically you're going to look at, you know, Thranduil and like the, you know, Thorin or, you know, Dane, and it's really not going to make sense for them to be hanging out and going on adventures. It's kind of silly.
And we're talking about the difference between factional decks and theme decks. Right. To me, I think there is a distinction there, because I could want the uniformity of a ranger deck where it's, you know, I'm visualizing this small troop of rangers out in Ithilien or whatever, making mischief and fighting against the Herodrim. And to me, that's kind of factional and thematic, whereas a theme deck could also be conceptual. So, mm-hmm. for example, like the most recent one I posted over on Master of Lore, it was Merry, Theoden, and Eowyn. And it was meant to kind of abstract this one moment in the book where they're all riding together, and Merry is kind of, you know, trying to be a rider of Rohan even when he's not supposed to. And so you can take an idea and make a deck out of that, and it's not going to be perfectly aligned with all of the different factions or the one faction that you're trying to make. It can also be conceptual, which goes back to what Ian was saying about Merlond, or like a lot of people might include Pippin in a ranger deck. And if you really wanted to make that more thematic, you would have to put a little imagination into it and say, okay, well, maybe this is somewhere down the line, maybe even after the events of the book, where Pippin goes back to Gondor and he and Faramir are off adventuring. So sometimes you do have to put a little bit of imagination just to make the things work in terms of the world.
I think for me, what makes a thematic deck, really, if you get down to the core of it, if we're talking about, you know, we're saying it's a spectrum, but what distinguishes a thematic deck from a non-thematic deck, it's really, do you take theme into consideration at all when choosing cards that are going to go into your deck? And if the answer to that is yes, then for me, that's a theme deck, wherever it falls on the spectrum. And if you don't, then not. And so that can take the form of like, you know, am I going to include a Mirkwood Runner in my deck? If you're just solely basing your decision off of, you know, gameplay considerations, does this fit into what I need this deck to do? Then it's probably not a theme deck. But if there's some part of you that's thinking, I'm not sure, if this really fits the lore of the deck, or I'm not sure how it relates to other characters. If you're even thinking about it, then to me that makes it a thematic deck in some sense. So it's all about, like, what are you taking into consideration when you're building the deck, no matter how closely it's adhering to the actual lore.
That's a good baseline.
Yeah, to put a finer point on my earlier comment, and I think we've all been sort of echoing it, is I think for most people, at least again, my reading of the forum post is theme deck means trait deck. It doesn't mean what you're describing, Derek, which was Eowyn with some hobbits doing some stuff. It's are the traits consistent? And that's what I sort of find to be frustrating, and not frustrating, that's the wrong word, but perplexing again. And because there's so many players who say, I can't beat this quest, this game is too hard. And I think they handicap themselves because they only want to play trait decks. And there aren't that many traits, I would say, outside of dwarves and maybe hobbits, that can consistently beat all of the quests. And so if you're going to artificially limit yourself by, I only want a dwarf deck, or I only want an elf deck, then we'll see how the elves work out. I only want an eagle deck, which is one of the weakest traits, I think. Or Gondor, or what have you. If you limit yourself to building based on traits, that is not the designer's goal. And we've said many times on our episodes, their goal is to develop spheres, and to keep them sort of hopefully distinct. And the traits are sort of subsidiary to that, as I think they very well should be, right? Because there's no one nation of Middle Earth or race of Middle Earth that fits entirely within one sphere, and nor should they, because that would be entirely boring, I think. I think it would limit design space. And so I think the game can be excruciatingly difficult if you don't like deck building, which a lot of players drawn to this game don't. And two, if you will build the decks, but you're artificially handicapping yourself to only including traits and heroes all of the same race or what have you. And yeah, the game's going to be difficult in that way because it's not how the game is designed. It's not the intent behind designing cards. And so, again, I build decks to win. I have never once in my life of this game, which had its third birthday not that long ago, thought, oh God, I can't include the Defender of Ramaz in this particular deck, even though he's got a fantastic four defense because he doesn't fit with the theme. It has just never happened. It's, I need some defending allies. Who do I pick? Wingardium, Defender of Ramaz. I need some attacking allies. Who do I need? And whatever it happens to be. So, I feel like this is the one episode where I'm just going to be the contrary one, and maybe every episode I'm the contrary one. But that's just not how I deck build.
No. It's good. The perspective you're bringing is good, though, Matthew. Yeah. And here's the thing. Let me point out that there is even a middle path here, as has been pointed out earlier. It really is a spectrum because, so I played my kind of the deck that I'd been playing a lot, for quite some time, actually. My slow, deliberate, very, locked down the staging area deck against the first Voice of Isengard scenario and stomped it and, thought, okay, well, I want to go back and play it again and have it be hard. So I completely acknowledge what you're saying, Matthew, which is that I arbitrarily limited myself. But the reason why is I wanted it to be harder. And I find that with certain scenarios, if I find that they're too easy on the first playthrough because I have a deck that really is what you're talking about, which is just include all the best stuff that works the best together, that some scenarios aren't hard enough for me, for my liking, because I want, I want to win, and that's what I'm building towards just like you are, but I also am looking for having fun in the way that I win, and sometimes the easy victory to me is not really that enjoyable, and I suspect it is probably for everyone that plays this game on a certain level. You want it to feel like you really earned it. So actually going back and playing the first Voice of Isengard scenario where it was Rohan and Gondor, and I didn't pick, even though Eagles would have fit really great into that deck strategically, I didn't put them in there because there was no reason for Eagles to be at the Fords of Isen for that battle. And it makes it more rewarding that I arbitrarily limited my deck building space that I'm still able to beat it.
I think it makes a ton of sense. My counterpoint to that would be if I was paid to playtest this game, paid to play this game, paid to podcast, and I did nothing but play LOTR LCG, I would love to do some of these things. With that said, my playtime is limited. It ebbs and flows with how my school schedule goes and in real life, as I'm sure everyone's does, but when I only have one weekend a month or two weekends a month to play this game, I don't have time to build a trait-specific deck that's not going to win. Because I'm only going to be able to fit in three or four quests in a couple of hours. That's typically about how many we get in a play session. And I don't want to lose all three or four times. And sometimes we do. Even with good decks, we'll pick hard quests, the nightmare ones. But with limited play time, I don't play every day. Again, I've said 1,000 times, I don't play solo. And so if I played solo, I could probably play at home a lot. And I've never even attempted two-handed. So that just doesn't really interest me anymore. And so it's one of those things where, yeah, I think if I played more often, I'd be a bit more experimental, especially in the lull between quests. But playing two times a month with some buddies, a couple hours, three or four quests, I just want to win the damn things, you know? And so, but point well taken, and I totally get it. I wish I could be more experimental. Again, trying that Rohan deck just to do something different than what I always do. I had more fun playing that deck than I've had playing this game in a very long time. Because, again, it was not my play style. But, maybe I need to be more thematic. I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here. But I just, you know, I want to win, and I want to have fun, but I don't want to artificially handicap myself.
Just saying, is you need to retire and get a sponsorship so you can just play this game professionally.
Right. I should start a Kickstarter. Yeah.
The challenge aspect, though, that Dan is bringing up and Matthew addressing, like, sometimes I do see people kind of saying that this game is super easy for them, actually, in certain quests that they just blow through them. And similar to what Dan was saying, I do move to theme decks too, because I think generally I kind of default to more of the gameplay aspect than the theme, and just building decks that will win. And I like kind of the imaginative game of figuring out how these characters ended up together, and that works for me as far as theme goes. But after I beat a quest, I do kind of go to theme to add that challenge to it. Like, I remember a encounter at Eggman Din, which is one of the easiest quests around. One of the actually interesting playthroughs I had of that was a solo Hobbit deck. And this was before Black Riders came out. So we're talking about the old weak Hobbit build where you can't fight. And so I went through that entire quest without fighting a single enemy except for the boss orc, his name at the moment. And that was actually an interesting playthrough, because it was like, and I know some players, they don't like, it's just like fundamentally opposed to their DNA to purposefully handicap themselves. But for those players who it's not kind of completely off the table, and they find certain scenarios of the game itself easy, I do suggest trying out theme decks, because it doesn't feel like you're just chopping yourself off with the leg. It feels like, something that's existed in video games and board games for a long time, which is you purposely take on a harder difficulty level by using a theme deck, whether it's, you know, hobbits that can't fight or something else that will make the quest more interesting for you.
Well, let's get back to some of the more viable theme decks. And what I mean when I say viable is ones where the card pool is a little more fleshed out, and the decks can work a little bit more effectively. So we talked about Rangers, specifically the Rangers of Ithilien. Hopefully one day we'll see the Rangers of the North get fleshed out a little bit more, but we'll talk about that later in the show. Let's talk about Hobbits for a minute. What do you need to put into your Hobbit deck to make it sing, as we like to say?
Well, no songs. Those suck. Love of Tales, that's the one I was thinking of.
Oh yeah, that's one that goes in that pile of really nice thematically, but just totally not worth the space in your deck.
That is one of I think the more controversial cards. There are people who swear by that card, and I don't get it. But
the only way that card becomes viable is if you're playing like 60 round games, right? And yeah, this gets back to Matthew's point of, I wish I had that kind of time to play the game. But
I mean, Fast Hitch is, I think, a no-brainer. It's cheap, easy readying for Hobbits, and it's not in the Spirit Sphere.
Yeah, and because of the way the Black Rider Hobbits work, you always want to keep your threat kind of low. So instead of using songs to mitigate the resource curve, especially if you're playing Trisphere, I like to have Resourceful in there, because at a certain point, your threat should get well below 20 if you're playing your deck right. So Resourceful works really nicely there.
Yeah, and Fast Hitch has a nice little thematic combo with Peace and Thought.
Right.
Works really well.
Yeah, there's a couple of the Hobbit characters that came out in the Black Riders, like Farmer Maggot, where it's kind of a classic example of, I think there are other tactics allies that are generally better than Farmer Maggot, but if I'm playing a Hobbit deck, I just can't not put him
in. Yeah, you got to have him in there.
I mean, Build a Pony certainly helps boost up their hit points, which is I mean, every Hobbit card really goes in the deck. It almost builds itself.
Build a Pony... Yeah, Build a Pony strategically is a freaking amazing card, because you're obviously, you're playing leadership to pay for him at all, which means you're playing Sam, because Sam, outside of Hobbits, is an amazing leadership hero, and right there you're getting a free 2-hit point ally with 1 willpower, 1 attack, like, amazing global boosting ability. Like, that card is so good.
Let's talk Rohan for a minute, because Matthew, you mentioned your Rohan deck that you were playing around with. And one thing I really like about Rohan as they've developed, really just in the last year, is that they're kind of two Rohans, mm-hmm. which we didn't see a lot of with the other traits. Like with dwarves, they span all the spheres, but really dwarves are about having a critical mass. But with Rohan, you kind of have Tactics Rohan and Spirit Rohan, both which serve different purposes.
Yeah. It's good now that there's getting to be more heroes and, you know, like Eomer in particular, that you can mix and match, you know, mix and match the two together even.
Yeah, I mean, I've mixed Tactics and Spirit Rohan decks. I'm not sure that either a pure Spirit Rohan or a pure Tactics Rohan deck will work. Off the top of my head, I don't know if we have three heroes of each. But if we do, I'm not sure how strong it would be. With that said, with most of these theme decks, I think they almost build themselves, because with the Hobbits, there's just such a limited number of Hobbit-specific cards, and they're all pretty good, you're going to put them all in. There are only so many Rohan cards, most of which are good, you're going to put most of them in. There's a few that I think are duds, I can't think of their name off the top of my head, but they almost build themselves. Right, Gondor, there are very few Gondor-specific cards. The ones that are specific to the trait, the events and the attachments, you're going to put them in. Eagles are the same way. There's only so many eagle cards. So when it comes to what cards do we need, like we were talking about with the Hobbits, with Fast Hitch and whatnot, most theme decks sort of build themselves with little to no variation, which is also partly why I don't like trait decks. Maybe I shouldn't say theme decks. But Rohan is certainly interesting. I think you're right, because it's this bouncing in and out of play thing, which we're going to see again with the elves. It's sort of interesting that Rohan and elves are working much the same way, which is discarding and getting rid of allies.
Well, it's not quite the same, though, because Rohan is more about discard for effect, right. And Sylvan are definitely going to be more about bouncing.
Right, it is different, but also kind of the same. I mean, no other trait has it at the moment. I mean, I guess eagles kind of do too, though, right? Their purpose is you use them once they leave, and if you've got eagles of the Misty Mountain, they get put under that. So, in a way, it's sort of weird that there's three traits that all sort of deal with allies leaving play, and dwarves are really the only one. Dwarves and Gondor, I suppose, are the only ones where you want to mass the armies of them, which I guess makes sense. Elves weren't a massive force, right? They're leaving Middle-earth, and eagles are dive bombing things, so they're in and out. And Rohan, I still am not entirely sure what allies being discarded for effects is supposed to represent thematically. Maybe just you're on a horse and you're fast, so you're here and then you're gone, which is kind of like eagles dive bombing. I don't really know, but
and there's only so many things you can do within the confines of the game. So you know they've played around with it a bit, like with hobbits and engagement costs and things like that. But
right, I mean, we've seen the new Ent card spoiled, and so they enter play exhausted, which I think is entirely thematically appropriate. You know, for their high stats relative to their cost.
Well, we can't not talk about dwarves. So because the field is so broad with dwarves, do you guys have a particular kind of dwarf deck that you've enjoyed playing in the past?
For me, I actually steer away from what I think is considered the best. Like, you know, the archetypical dwarf deck is the Dayan, and then you go, like, probably, you know, have some spirits, then you get the Feely Keely and some of the, you know, because it's really all about hitting that 5 threshold. But one of the things that I find when I do play dwarves is I much prefer Biffer as one of my heroes. And then kind of, you know, going the lore route, especially now with the digging thing. Like I guess what I'm saying is spirit lore digging dwarves is like a sub-theme is much more interesting to me than the, I'm going to use Dayan, I'm going to use a very good tail and Feely and Keely and just dump like 15 dwarves on the table and just destroy everything. Like, yeah, that's fun for the first couple times you play it, and after a while that deck can get kind of boring. But I really like the new sub theme of dwarves around Zigil Minor and what is the name of that event?
And just the
hidden cache, and just trying to hit those hidden caches, and you get that little like boost when you find one, and it's a much more fun archetype to play. I think, not to mention,
and it's still very well equipped as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that there has been this kind of up and down wave of the dwarves. They became the most powerful. People got tired of them, including myself. But like you guys are mentioning, I think the dwarves, just because of how big their particular pool of cards available is, actually have the most room to create different theme decks instead of, like you said, Matthew, most of the trait decks just build themselves. That's not the case with dwarves. I mean, the most powerful dwarf deck will kind of jump out at you and will build itself, but there's a lot of more room for creativity than any other trait just because of how much there is. Like, I really love the dwarf digging deck you guys are talking about. Another deck I built, which I posted on Tales a while ago, was using Glowin as kind of a resource engine to fund like encounter deck manipulation effects. So there's just a lot of room for creativity, just because of how much there is there. And it'd be nice to see the other traits get that kind of support so that they're not all kind of shoehorned into one particular model.
I totally agree with that.
And speaking of creativity, is it worth bringing up Outlands? Or do we just say refer to episode one? Or
yeah, this is the part where anyone who's interested in Outlands should go back and listen to that episode. Ouch.
I mean, speaking of decks that build themselves, my goodness. I mean, there's only 10 Outland cards. Put them all in your deck. You're good to go.
You mean buy the core set, buy Steward's Fear,
done, for sure.
All right.
Step three, something. Step four, profit.
Well, are there any other theme decks or even conceptual decks that you guys want to mention before we press on here?
Well, so we mentioned Sylvan. We kind of know that Sylvan's going to be a theme with all the stuff that's being spoiled. But the one Elven theme that exists now and has for a while, really from Dwarrodelph, is kind of it's centered around essentially Glorfindel and Elrond, and just really powerful attachments, really powerful unique attachments. And then it tends more towards the turtle strategy, because you get access to like Elrond's Council and Galadrim's Greeting, and you know, you're lowering your threat, you're messing with the staging area, you're questing like mad. It's definitely strategically viable and fairly thematic, especially if all the expensive allies you're getting for free with Vilya are actually elves. It can actually be thematically pretty solid as well. But that's certainly an existing archetype that can compete with dwarves for sheer power.
And it speaks to the difference we were speaking of earlier between a trait deck and a theme deck, because there it's about the elves kind of coming together, whereas it's going to be a mix of traits between the Sylvan and the Noldor and whatever else you throw in that deck.
Right, and we've kind of been talking about the trait decks mostly, but yeah, there's, if we're talking about theme decks in general, I mean, there's the characters centered around Rivendell, like Aragorn, Eladan, Elrohir, just basically all those people who spent time at Rivendell. You can build a Rivendell-centric deck,
Grey Company deck.
Exactly. There's not a ton of cards to support it beyond the heroes, unfortunately, but it's kind of a little kernel there that could develop into something. You know, there's the Gondor Rohan Alliance deck you can build. So
yeah, that's a fun
couple one. Of theme decks out there outside of just sticking to one trait.
And going back to your Rivendell deck, there's one thing that can help you put together a theme deck, which is obviously one of the main themes in Tolkien's writing, is the journey. Because if you have Elladan and Elrohir and Aragorn out ranging together because they're rangers. They're going to bump in to people from all over Wilderland and Eriador and so on. So, you know, if you end up putting some Gondor or hobbits in that deck, it makes sense because these guys went all over the west of Middle-earth on adventures and pursuing orcs and things like that. So that's one way to justify it if you are, you know, you mentioned some people being genetically opposed to making things more difficult. Well, there are people who are genetically opposed to, you know, mixing and matching the wrong cards.
Right.
So if you need to justify it to yourself that way so that poor old John Ronald isn't rolling in his grave, you could do it that way as well.
Nice. So I need your help on this, Matthew. I tried to make a Bjorning deck, and it consisted of the Bjorn hero and three copies of Bjorning Beekeeper, and then 47 events and attachments. And for some reason, I can't beat into Ithilien. I need your help.
Oh, I got it. You forgot Gandalf. Just put Gandalf in there.
Oh yeah, there's three copies of Gandalf, and then 44 events and attachments. And I can't seem to beat the hard scenarios. I can't figure it out. This game sucks.
It does suck. Maybe you should try building your deck based on the art. Maybe that might help you make a more solid deck.
Hey, I challenge you. I'm going to bring a copy of this deck to Gen Con, and we're going to make you play it one of the games. The all Magali deck is freaking bonkers good. And honestly, every expansion that comes out, because they give her all the like power, like high-profile heroes, that deck gets better and better and better. So you mock. I'm not making this up. I will bring an all Magali. Every single card in the deck is the art is by her. I'm going to give it to you, and you're going to play.
We'll see.
And you'll be shocked by how
good it is. Who are the heroes?
I think the one. Let me go to hallofbjorn.com.
I mean, the thing is, she does do so much of the art that you could make strategic good decisions, you know, of, oh, well, you know, she made 10 heroes, so let me pick three best.
I mean, I built the deck, so I doubt there were good decisions that went into it. But let's see. The heroes are Elrond, Elenor, and Spirit Glorfindel.
Huh, okay.
And then the allies are like Imladris, Zigil, Arwen, Sylvan Tracker, Haldir, Gildor, Hobbit Gandalf was drawn by her. You get attachments like Expert Treasure Hunter, Protector of Lorien, like Resourceful. You get Galadrim's Greeting and Word of Command. Like it's pretty good. You don't get a Test of Will. You don't get Elrond's Counsel. But I mean, other than that, it's pretty much a straight up elf, you know, turtle deck where you just lock everything down and control the game. But yeah, I don't know. The deck is better than you would think for having only her art in it.
All right.
There you go.
Challenge accepted.
So we know that in the upcoming Ringmaker cycle, which is finally going to be starting at the end of this month, we're going to see more support for Sylvan decks. We're going to see maybe some more Doomed or Isengard stuff. I don't know. But we're getting a little bit of support for some of the themes. What are some future themes you guys would like to see explored or improved upon that are either not in the game yet or already in the game and need to see some love? I'll start.
Eagles.
As soon as I put this in the show notes, the first thing I wrote down was mounted Tooks. We're not going to see it until the last Saga expansion when they do the Scouring of the Shire, but like I'm ready for that full Hobbit deck with Pippin leading a swarm of Tooks on ponies. It's going to be good times.
Hobbit War Pony.
Hobbit War Pony, that's right.
Hobbit War Pony technology right there. That'll be dominant. The dominant archetype.
Or even a Bjorning deck. That's show. Well, listen, before the show,
it'll never happen.
Well, they're gonna if this You're game just... keeps going, it will. And let me tell you why. Because like before the show, we were talking about the One Ring RPG, which I just picked up the cool rule book for, and Bjornings are one of the playable cultures, and you know they go into this backstory about this whole thing between the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings, where Bjorn starts to kind of gather all these ruffians and woodmen to kind of under his banner. So I think you could put together. I don't know how they would differentiate it from some of the other traits, but you could put together a pretty cool...
They'd be expensive and not worth playing.
Based on what? The one card? The beekeeper?
I'm just giving the beekeeper crap. Yeah. It's not a very good card.
So anyway, I would personally like to see the Bjornings or even the Woodmen of Southern Mirkwood get some attention, because I think that's kind of an under-explored area of the lore.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how long the game goes on, and hopefully there's many years, but... at the end of the day, there's only so many different peoples to go into. I think I mean, they will have to go there eventually if the game is still going at that point. I mean, I think they could add in, I don't know how far off the deep end they want to go, but he did have all these animals at his house, so he could have little horses with serving trays.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Exhaust and dogs walking on their hind legs. And,
exhaust to find a bread attachment.
There are major characters in the books that still don't have hero representation, so I would imagine a fair number of players would be a little bit annoyed if like they start busting out all these, you know, kind of esoteric tribes.
There's already a woodman coming in the Ninninilth. It was spoiled.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, I rest my case.
We can hope. We can hope. I'm personally glad that Gwaihir was spoiled because I've always liked eagles. I mean, I agree with Matthew. In and of themselves, they're not quite strong enough. You always end up having to splash something else in there. I mean, there's no eagle heroes. So obviously, you've got something else in the deck as well. But I look forward to making a deck around Gwaihir. And I've been playing a lot of a Boromir eagle deck with support of the eagles, Tactics Boromir. And it's so much fun because you get him to be crazy good. So yeah, that's Eagles is something that I look forward to them continuing to improve.
Rangers of the North. I mentioned it earlier, but I'd love to see them expand on the stuff we already saw in the Mirkwood cycle, with kind of them being focused in the leadership sphere, and also seeing a way for them to differentiate them from the Rangers of Ithilien, which would be a little bit tricky because they're still Rangers and they're still sneaking around in the woods. But I'd love to see some more Rangers of the North cards.
Yeah, it'll be nice to be able to build a legit Grey Company deck.
Right. For me personally, I've been waiting for the ants for a long time. It was very cool to see that one ant spoiled in the latest preview. Kind of got overshadowed by Galadriel a little bit, but the ants is there, so I think that's a signal that the ants should be on their way, hopefully. And it'll be really interesting to see how they're kind of portrayed in the game. I know a lot of people, including myself, are expecting them to be super expensive and have these crazy defense and hit point values. But, I mean, we can't extrapolate too much from just this one card, but at least that one card, it seemed kind of a different route where it was a surprisingly cheap card, but with very good stats for that cost. So kind of interesting to see them do that.
Yeah, and it looks like they might be going with a whole theme of they're all going to, you know, the allies anyway, coming into play exhausted to offset the cheaper cost. I think that's going to be really cool. I'm calling it now, though, man. Grim Resolve in an int deck is going to be ridiculously good. Or, you know, or if you have someone else playing in all leadership and they do the, whatever the leadership event is, that Strength of Arms that readies all allies. Yeah, that'll be pretty good combo there. Suddenly all your ints that were going to be, you know, thinking and not being hasty, just change their mind and decide to be hasty.
And one other thing worth mentioning before we kind of start to close this one up is that using theme decks is one path of introducing new people to the game. Because, you know, like we've said countless times, some people are in it for the gameplay, some people are in it for the theme, some people are somewhere in the middle. But if you bump into some people who are interested in the Lord of the Rings, having a theme deck kind of ready to go, it would be kind of a fun way to introduce people to the game as well. I'm not sure how to convert the people who don't care about theme into caring about the theme. You just have to kind of, you know, sit them down and make them listen to you reading the Lord of the Rings or something like that. That would work, right, Matthew?
It's like we did with Matthew. We guilt him until he begrudgingly agrees to care about theme.
We're not there yet.
No, I mean, I've read the books once through. I've tried to read them. I start and stop all the time. Sort of the second book stops my tracks as an adult. I just can't get through it. And, you know, I've seen the movies, of course, a bazillion times. It's just, I'm not as well versed in the Tolkien theme as you guys are. And so theme just matters a heck of a lot less. But no matter the game, like, I'm a big Star Trek nerd. I don't know if that's ever come up on the show before. I don't recall. But I know the ins and outs of Star Trek like there's no tomorrow. But in the Star Trek CCG version 1.0, 2.0, any of the Star Trek games, I'm not a slave to theme there either, even though I know it very well. Mm-hmm. The point of playing a game is to win and have a good time, certainly. And I think there's something to be said about if you stomp things all the time, then it's not fun. But that, to me, speaks to poor game design, not oh, I'm too good at building decks. And so I'm all about, you know, yes, having a good time with my buddies, certainly, but I want to win. I don't like losing every time I play, even by being a slave to theme, no matter how much I might love it or be invested. So,
and my attack wing record will speak to that. My Cardassian build is just not never come out on top.
Yeah,
it's interesting you bring up Star Trek Attack Wing.
This episode will go for another hour if we get down that road. Keep going, Ian. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Keep going.
But it's interesting just bringing up Attack Wing and Star Trek, because I know one of the huge debates in that game is faction pure versus non, which is this whole idea, like, are all your ships going to be Federation and all your crew members, or are you going to mix them? And the players who mix them, of course, are going to have these awesome combos and just dominate. Whereas the players who are feel more tied to the theme and only are playing just pure faction, you know, can tend to get overshadowed a bit. And it's a whole different thing. It's competitive versus this game is cooperative, but in a lot of ways, I guess, is one of my concluding thoughts about this, is it's similar in that if you want the best combos in this game, at least as the game exists right now, you're definitely going to be moving away from theme. But because it is a cooperative game, the stakes are a little lower and you can experiment with theme and still have success.
Right. I think by breaking yourself of theme, it forces you to be more creative in many ways. You can look across all themes, all traits, all spheres to define cards that are going to work together that you might otherwise be previously missing. And I think that can potentially create a rich experience in and of itself in a different way than having fun thematic moments that match the books can be. Because again, you know, I understand wanting to play the books and recreate those experiences. I understand the appeal of the saga expansions. I certainly like those quests, but if I wanted to relive the story of the book, I would read the book or I would watch the movie.
Yeah.
And to me, this is about, well, playing a game and winning, but also creating a different story. As a side note, we were speaking about the life of the game. I don't know why, but it's a minority opinion to be sure, but it's vocal enough that people think the game is ending after the saga expansions are done in the next year or so. And no, the game started without sagas. I think the game can continue beyond sagas. In fact, there's more story to tell in Middle-earth. I mean, how many video games, I posted this on our Facebook page not that long ago, Shadow of Mordor, I believe it's called, how many games have come out that are not the story of the game in Middle-earth? There's the RPG, Create Your Own Adventure, there's all these video games. There's lots of places to explore in Middle-earth that don't have to be within the time frame of The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings. So I think there are certainly many, many areas to explore, many themes to flesh out, even if they were minor in the books. That I don't think the provided sales are still strong, that the end of the sagas are the end of this game. I think that's a silly notion, that's far too premature. I think we have lots of cool stuff ahead of us.
Agreed.
I just want to add on, as far as theme, that I prefer to be a have my cake and eat it too kind of player, where I want to win, but I do like having the thematic side, and I think that three of the most powerful combos in the game are very thematic, so it's possible to do both. I think, like, Sneak Attack and Gandalf, Elrond plus Vilya, and Glorfindel with Light of Valinor, those three combos right there are amazingly powerful, and they're thematic. So if you want to crush a scenario but do it with a deck that's thematic, you can start from any one of those, and, you know, Dane plus Dwarves is another one. So, I mean, there's definitely options out there.
Yeah, I think Matthew had said that, you know, a lot of times the game forces you into theme in a sense, and I think those are some great examples of where the theme and the gameplay cross over.
Yeah.
And I think it's gotten better over time. I think some of the thematic gameplay conflicts that people complain about, a lot of it comes from the core set or early on. The biggest example being Steward of Gondor. And, you know, if you're going to be hardcore theme, the only person that should go on is Denethor, but that's also the most powerful resource generation card in the game. And, one of the few outright just repeatable resource generation in the game. So
yeah, not using that is definitely shooting yourself in the foot.
Exactly. So unfortunately, in my opinion, that should have just been a generic named card like Lotso Money or something.
leader among his people. I've had that exactly. Exact same thought. Yeah. Yeah, that's what that card needed to be.
But it's gotten better, I think, like you're pointing out, Dan, that the two are coming together more, I think, as the designers are learning from the past and, you know, new design teams and all that kind of thing.
And we're getting Galadriel and Nenya, you know, so it continues itself again, where that's going to be, you know, and her and Celeborn, and you get these natural combos that are very powerful and very... thematic, so it's good.
That reminds me of a thought that I had earlier and forgot to say it is, you know, again, there's the spectrum of theme. Some people on the forums have been completely complaining that they hate types of cards that can only go on one character, like Vilya or Nenya, whereas where it's entirely thematically appropriate for the book, but it really limits you as far as your hero lineup. That I actually don't have a problem with. As the non-theme player, these are some of the most powerful artifacts of Middle-earth. They should be quite limited, I think, in many ways. Mm-hmm. People are complaining that they don't want a Gandalf hero. I think at this point it's all but inevitable, and they're complaining, well, I can't use the ally. Because I'm not responding on the forums anymore, finally someone came up with my point, which was, well, this is how you balance out a hero. Gandalf as a hero, of course, has to be powerful, because it's Gandalf. It's a wizard. And so part of the balancing act, besides probably what I'm assuming, you know, if we get him as a hero, he will have a high threat, much like Elrond does, that the fact you cannot use either ally version is a balancing act in and of itself. So I don't have a problem with some of these more thematic limitations of certain rings or artifacts only going, or horses only go, being able to attach to certain characters. I think that's entirely appropriate.
It's going to be like the Doom cards in multiplayer, honestly, because can you imagine in a four-player game of just kind of pick up game where, oh, by the way, I'm playing Gandalf here, and then three other players, the three copies of Gandalf ally in the deck are like, nope, can't play that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, some people are suggesting on the forums that everyone be able to play Gandalf. Like, if there's a Gandalf hero, everyone can still play the ally. Well, one, that breaks the fundamental core set rule book that you cannot have the same name character. You know, they're like, well, name it Mithrandir. It was like, well, that's why Lord Aragorn isn't named Strider, right? It's the same character. But, you know, those are sort of silly discussions aside. I think the way to limit some of these really powerful artifacts or characters is to sort of offset, you know, allies that can be used or make it only attachable to one hero. Like if we get a Shadowfax, for example, it probably should, if it's going to be a powerful mount, it should only be able to be attached to Gandalf. Especially, but it's also thematically appropriate because he's the only one who could tame the horse, you know?
Right.
So I don't have problems with those sorts of like really, really, really strict a theme on certain kinds of cards. On other kinds of cards, like you mentioned the Steward of Gondor, I'm okay with it because I think thematically it's appropriate. Gondor is a wealthy nation. Maybe they should have spread the wealth a little bit more. They were, you know, but I think it's appropriate. I understand why people don't like the name of the card. Maybe it could have just been called Wealth of Gondor, honestly, and that would have been an okay attachment. But we got that card later. It's what's going to bother some people isn't going to bother others. And as a cooperative game, I think that's what makes it fun.
Before we go, let's talk Gen Con. It was announced, was that Friday night? Saturday night? Anyway, doesn't matter. It was announced that our fellowship event this year is going to be the Old Forest. Any initial speculation before we wrap this episode up?
Tom Bombshell.
He's a merry fellow.
Yellow boots.
Objective ally, or I guess that's kind of the only option at this point, isn't it?
It's going to be a hero card, and everyone's going to have to play it.
Just like Gandalf.
That's easy, because you could have Tom Bombadil, then you have Arwen Benadar, and then you have the Witch King. And you got, there you go, three different versions of the same hero.
Awesome.
I mean, I would say that people were disappointed he wasn't in the Hobbit sagas or the Lord of the Rings saga. Lord of the Rings. And, you know, I mean, I'm indifferent. I've never liked the character much to begin with. It's sort of weird, and it feels very artificial in the book to me. Like, it doesn't really fit in with anything else. And I think it's partly when he wrote those chapters versus the rest of it. But with that said, that's a whole other show discussion. I think if he doesn't appear, then there's going to be table flipping.
Nerd riot.
Right. What the quest will actually entail, the brief description was fighting the Mordor people in the Old Forest, which I didn't know nothing about the lore. I don't remember that happening. Maybe it was in another time frame or something, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I imagine it'll probably be something like you're running from the agents into the forest, and you probably have to fight off both some random orcs and old man Willow and some
and maybe Bombadil's like
angry
the,
trees.
The eagle ally from the Battle of Five Armies, where he's just a one copy, and if you pop, if you happen to draw him, it's like a really cool thematic moment. Yeah. And he does something fun. I mean, who knows?
I could go for that.
He sings a song.
Love of Tales.
Love of Tales.
And then everyone sheds their clothes and runs around naked.
But it'll be interesting to know what kind of deck to bring, because last year we needed willpower heavy decks because we had to fight with willpower. P.S. a lot of hate on that quest on the forums recently too, which I'm surprised because they're saying it added nothing new. There was nothing original, just like Galadriel. The night day mechanic is so interesting.
It's
and
super
it made
cool.
It
yeah.
hard. I've only played the quest I think two or three times. I've still never beaten it, but I haven't made a deck to beat it. I typically play it three or four players, and it can be very difficult. And I still haven't beaten it yet. But again, I haven't played it. But once there and then once the other weekend, and didn't build decks for it. But I find it, of the three, to be the most interestingly mechanically, even if it's not the most difficult of the three.
Yeah, Stone of Erech was great, but maybe the old forest.
Yeah,
we'll
that time
some,
of day mechanic is really something I hope.
I mean,
they,
the fact that things get more and more difficult as you progress through the quest, I think is just very, very cool. But totally. So who knows what sort of deck we're going to need this year? That's always the hard part, is knowing what to build. But we'll see. I'm definitely looking forward to it. That was one of the highlights, I think, of the Gen Con last year, was getting to play that quest.
Yeah,
my early guess is location management, if we're trying to go through some forest.
That's smart, yeah.
Probably the hinder keyword might pop up.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they did something like in the books, how the forest kept shifting around on them and they got lost. So somehow locations kind of shift around and you get lost. And I don't know, something like that.
Maybe if you don't explore a location, the turn it has to switch with the location in the staging area or something like that. That's a neat idea. Hey, Caleb and Matt, write that down. But it's kind of a cool idea, right? It forces you to sort of, old school willpower, through things, but. Just give them high. I don't know. It's a neat idea that if you don't clear it, it no longer becomes active. It bounces back, and you're forced to go somewhere else or not have an active or something. That's a neat idea.
Old Man Willow will make you drowsy, and you have to exhaust your characters at the end of the phase or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
If they're listening an hour in to our rambling, then I'm sure they will do exactly that.
Hopefully, it was worth your time, guys.
No.
Speaking
checks
of
payable
Con,
to Matthew Dempsey. Oh, jeez.
But speaking of Gen Con, if you hear this before the registration time, or if you hear it before all the registrations are all eaten up by the rest of us, we are planning on attending the fellowship event at 6 o'clock on Friday. At least that one. Who knows? It might be so fun that we go to all of them. But 6 o'clock on Friday, if you are attending Gen Con, we will be there as well. And an impromptu, unofficial, super secret rangery, Gray Company event is in the works as well. So stay tuned for that.
Probably involve adult beverages.
I'll be there.
Right.
I've been drinking beer the whole episode.
That's why it's getting better as it goes
on. Right.
That's fine.
It's been getting better as it goes on. Okay. Just kidding.
This is the point where I need to go to bed.
Cut that.
But this has been episode 10. 10 people, double digits, of the Gray Company podcast. As always, you can find us out there on the interwebs at graycompanypodcast.wordpress.com. From there, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. You can find an RSS link. You can find us on iTunes. We are everywhere you want us to be. Do send us an email if you have any questions or comments about thematic deck building. It is thegraycompanypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll be happy to respond to your questions or comments or concerns or criticisms. We're open to that as well. We just put it right in the spam folder.
Yeah, go over that. We'll direct you to the forums.
That's right. And on the next episode, we are going back to strategy, so stay tuned for exactly what. And that is all. Thank you for listening and have a good night.